Okay, the March 13, 2012 meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy is called to order. And let the record reflect that the time is now 3:06 p.m. For the record, we do have a quorum. And present, we have Representative Pete Peterson, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Pruitt, Representative Tuck, Representative Olson, and myself, Chairing Representative Foster. Following members are excused, and that would be Representative Lynn. In the audience, let's see, do we have any senators or representatives? I don't see any. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones, as that does interfere with the sound system that we have here. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear HB 336 by Representative Thompson. That's the Energy Assistance Programs and Vouchers. HB 357, the ADA by Representative Pruitt, Sustainable Energy Program. HB 323 by Representative Wilson, which is the Non-Attainment Area Home Heating System Grants. And also bills previously heard. As a point of information, we're not planning to take public testimony on any of the bills today. All of the bills will be rescheduled for further discussion and public testimony. Under bills previously heard, we will be hearing first on HB 294 by Representative Edgman, and that is an act relating to power cost equalization. We do have a committee substitute for House Bill 294. And is there a motion to adopt CS for House Bill 294, Energy, which is 27-LS1108/B, as our working document?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I make a motion to adopt the CS for House Bill number 294, Energy, which is 27-LS1108/B, as our working document.
Okay, thank you. And is there an objection?
I'd object. For the purpose of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. I would like to ask my staff member, Paul LeBoll, to come forward and explain the differences between the committee substitute and the original bill. And if you could state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Paul LeBoll, staff to Representative Foster. Before you have the CS. The intent today is to describe the differences between the committee substitute and the sponsor's original bill. And as the sponsor's not able to be here today, we'd like to keep the focus on the changes between the committee substitute and the original bill and less on the substance of the bill itself. To start with, if you go to page 1, line 11, you'll see that we changed from what was originally in the sponsor's bill 700 as the kilowatt hour cap down to 600. We also removed schools from the beneficiary list of PCE, the thoughts being twofold. One, that the district cost factor is really where that should be addressed within the Department of Education's budget. And the other being that the school electric loads are so large that 600 kilowatt hours worth of PCE would not be worth much to them. Additionally, we kept the extension to businesses, but the sponsor's real target was small businesses. So we excluded businesses with a monthly usage over 2,400 kilowatt hours, which you can see on page 2. Lines 3 and 4, and also lines 15 and 16 address that. And the concept on that is that if PCE would apply to less than 25% of your monthly utility bill, then it's not helping you enough for the state to actually be stepping in on it. And at this point, if there's any questions, I'll be happy to address them.
Thank you, Mr. LeBoll. And as you mentioned, we're because the sponsor is currently in House Finance, we're going to hold off on the the substantive questions dealing with the bill. But if there are any questions in regards to the changes that were made from the original bill in the CS, I'll open that up. Are there any questions by committee members? Okay. Well, seeing none, let's see. Representative Sadler, is your objection maintained?
I would remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And CS... for House Bill 294 Energy Version M is adopted as our working document. And at this time, I'd like to set aside CS for HB 294 and until we have further information. So the next item on the agenda is HB 357 by Representative Pruitt, an act establishing an ADA sustainable energy program. Is there a motion to adopt House Bill 357-27-LS-1402/A as our working document?
I so move.
Okay. Is there an objection? And there is no objection. House Bill 357, Version A, is adopted as our working document. We have a committee substitute for HB 357. Is there a motion to adopt committee substitute for HB 357-27-LS-1402/M as our working document?
Mr. Chairman, I move. I so move.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sadler. Is there an objection? If not, the committee substitute for HB 357 is adopted as our working document. There is a fiscal note for the bill. The fiscal note is, I'm going to go through the numbers here, HB 357-DCCED-AIDEA-03-02. Is there a motion to adopt the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a moving guy, so I'm so moved.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sadler. Is there an objection? And hearing none, the fiscal note is adopted. Okay, Representative Pruitt, would you like to tell us about HB 336 or your staff?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start, Mr. Chair. And again, I'll go ahead and pass it on to my staff member, Dr. Kraft.
Okay, if you'd please approach and state your name and affiliation for the record, and please proceed.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. For the record, Lance Pruitt, representative for House District 21. Before you guys today is House Bill 357, which is an ADIS sustainable energy program. It's the companion bill to SB 25, which is sponsored by Senator McGuire over on the other side. What this bill would do is to make credit available by empowering ADA to finance or facilitate the financing of energy projects through the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Fund, also called SETS. Relying on credit as opposed to a traditional debt model ensures that project sponsors have some skin in the game and a stake in the project's success or failure. Most importantly, we start to put Alaska's assets to work, growing the economy within our own state. Currently, Alaska savings accounts are invested in stocks and bonds that drive economic activity outside Alaska. What this bill proposes instead that a portion of those savings be invested here in Alaska through ADA, not as blank checks to develop projects, but as loans for energy infrastructure. As each loan is repaid, the capital becomes available to recycle into new loans. The Railbelt Integrated Resource Plan alone identifies more than $5 billion in infrastructure that will need to be financed. And without this legislation, debt interest payments made by Alaskan utilities will continue to leave the state, and with it, Alaskans' money. ADA currently pays a dividend to the Treasury of between $20 and $30 million per year, and a larger balance sheet would actually increase ADA's earnings and thus its annual dividend to the state. By putting more of our assets to work locally, we can create opportunities, develop our resources, and create a sustainable economy for generations to come. What I'd like my staffer Dirk to do is give a brief sectional analysis of the proposed committee substitute, and then we can go ahead and proceed from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff representative Lance Pruitt. This is a rather large bill, so in the interest of time, I'll briefly go over each section. Section 1 gives the bill a short title. 2 states the legislative intent to appropriate in future years. 3 amends the legislative findings and policy in the chapter that created the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to include energy enterprises and amends the rest of the language for consistency. Section 4 adds energy to the list of enterprises in the ADA policy declaration. Section 5 makes a few grammatical changes and replaces power transmission intertie with an energy project and amends the following language for consistency. Section 6 replaces power transmission intertie with an energy project and adds loans for improvements in energy efficiency to the list of loans that may be purchased by ADA. Section 7 replaces a power transmission intertie with an energy project. And sections 8 through 12 and 4488-159, that sets the interest rates for ADA. So within the statute, there are multiple, in that within 4488-159, there are multiple sources of revenue for ADA that finance projects. And they suggested we need to be clear that the interest rate in this bill applies to the fund that we're creating. So in sections 8 through 12, we went through and just made that crystal clear that the fund we're creating applies to the interest rates apply to the fund that we're creating. It makes sure the interest rates are consistent with current practice. And this also makes sure ADA is not giving away money, but rather collecting an interest rate and earning money on the investments made. It also conforms with the private sector, so it's not crowding out private financial institutions. Section 13 adds renewable energy development to the list of types of projects that may qualify for payment for loan participation. Section 14 actually creates the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Program. Section 15 defines development fund and energy project for this program, as stated in AS 4488. Section 16 instructs the reviser that existing references to this chapter in AS 4488 will apply to the new Article 7A created in Section 14. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Are there any committee member questions or comments? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were talking about adding the word energy and taking out the phrase power transmission intertie. So does that mean that a power transmission intertie would no longer qualify for financing under ADA?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, it's actually going to be an all-inclusive. We meant to be all-inclusive with that language, so it could include an intertie as well.
Okay.
This is making it a broader definition for other energy projects.
Just want to clarify that. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll add to that just for the Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt?
Just so that everyone, the definition of energy project is listed on page 11, line 3. You can see all the different things that are included in that. And yes, transmission is A in that.
I see.
Yep.
Okay, are there any further questions? Seeing none, at this time, House Bill 357 will be set aside for further consideration at a later date. As our next order of business, we will be hearing House Bill 336 by Representative Thompson, which is an act establishing an energy assistance program and vouchers. Is there a motion to adopt House Bill 336, which is 27-LS1403/M, as our working document?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill 336, 27-LS1403/M as a working document.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Is there an objection? Hearing none, HB 336 version M is adopted as our working document. There are three fiscal notes for the bill. The fiscal notes are HB 336-DOR-TAX-03-02-12. The second fiscal note is HB 336-DOA-OAH-3-8-12. And finally, the last fiscal note is HB 336-DOR-PFD-03-02-12. Is there a motion to adopt these three fiscal notes?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
I'm sorry. What was that first one again? I guess two.
Yeah, it was.
Let's see the first one. The first one is
tax.
Correct. That's tax.
We got tax, DOA, and PFD.
The
Department of Revenue, but back to the...
Okay, I have it. Thank you.
Okay. Is there a motion to adopt the fiscal notes?
Mr. Chair, I so move.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pruitt. Is there an objection?
Real quick.
Representative Tuck?
So there's only two fiscal notes, or not three?
Three fiscal notes. So there's tax, there is DOA, and then there is Department of Revenue, PFD.
Yeah, okay, Department of Revenue, PFD.
Yeah, I confess I'm not seeing it either.
Maybe we could take a shred at ease here and
look at ease.
Clarification here, and it looks like we're not working on version M. We are working on version A. So, if we could get a rescission.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to rescind my motion earlier for introduction of version M as our working document, and move version A. So, House Bill 336, version A. That would be still 27-LS1403/A as our working document.
Okay, is there an objection? And I hear no objection, so House Bill 336, version A, is adopted as our working document.
Are they two separate motions?
Eddie's.
Eddie's.
I'm sorry, I didn't note that.
Have a motion, and is there any objection to the motion?
To rescind.
To rescind, correct. To rescind version M. And hearing no objection, that passes. And then if you could move version A.
And then I'll move version A, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Is there an objection to version A? Seeing no objection, House Bill 336, version A, is adopted as our working document. Instead of three fiscal notes, we have two fiscal notes. Is that correct? And for the record, please.
Chair Foster, this is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson, and I have two fiscal notes.
Okay, two fiscal notes. And what I have here are HB 336-DOA-0AH-3.8-12, as well as HB 336-DOR-PFD-03-02-12. Is there a motion to adopt these two fiscal notes?
Mr. Chair, I will move that we adopt the two fiscal notes that we have in front of us.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. And is there an objection? Hearing no objection, fiscal notes are adopted. It looks like we have Representative Thompson's staff here. And if you could tell us about HB 336, Jane, and please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson, who apologizes for not being here, but I think you're probably all thankful he isn't, because he sounded absolutely horrible when I talked to him at 6:30 this morning. HB 336 is an act to establish an energy assistance program in the Department of Revenue to issue an energy voucher to Alaska Permanent Fund dividend recipients and relating to the analysts and recommendation of an energy assistance program by the governor. Representative Thompson has been hearing from many of his constituents about the extremely high cost of energy in Fairbanks. In response to their cries of desperation, he has sponsored HB 336 to establish an energy assistance program in the Department of Revenue to issue energy vouchers to Alaskans who are eligible for a permanent fund dividend paid in 2012. The cost of high energy is crippling the interior. It is stifling development and forcing Alaskan residents to move to areas where they can find some financial energy relief. Although Fairbanks and the interior are hard hit by energy crisis, areas throughout the state are also suffering greatly as well. Representative Thompson is a supporter of long-term energy solutions. However, the time has come and gone. Alaskans need immediate relief. The Alaska Constitution states that the natural resources of the state should be provided for the maximum benefit of the people. Energy is a natural resource and should be available to all Alaskans. Although there may be some technical issues still with this bill, we are working with the appropriate agencies and departments to address the issues. As currently written, HB 336 would provide Alaskan adults with an energy voucher that is redeemable for 250 gallons of heating oil, the natural gas BTU equivalent of 250 gallons of heating oil, or 150 kilowatts of electricity. And I realize that 1,500 kilowatts of electricity is not an exact equivalent, but electricity is not a primary heating source for most Alaskans and usually is a secondary source, and I believe that's why this amount was chosen. The department shall maintain a list of qualified distributors of oil, natural gas, or electricity that may accept these vouchers for payment and redeem them for payment from the state. The person who does not pay directly for energy may have a replacement voucher issued in the name of their landlord and then negotiate with their landlord to have the amount taken off their rent. A person may also redeem their voucher for state and or for a check in the amount of $250. Section 2 of the bill directs the governor to analyze the energy assistance program and alternate options for providing energy assistance before October 1, 2012. The governor will provide a report to the legislature making recommendations for an energy assistance program to be implemented in the fiscal year ending in June 30, 2014. He should correlate the amount of assistance to the local cost of residential heating, taking into consideration the price of fuel and heating degree days in each community, is implemented based on the crude oil price or heating oil price, has total funding based on state revenue, minimize administrative costs, makes participation of fuel distributors voluntary, includes a hold harmless provision for recipients of public assistance and veterans benefits, and includes penalties for fraud, including ineligibility for future permanent fund dividend checks. The governor shall analyze the following options and may analyze alternate options to provide energy assistance to Alaska. One is a fuel price reduction program with the following features: a state reimbursement to a heating oil or natural gas distributor or a portion of the wholesale purchase price of fuel that the distributor sold to heat residential structures; B, an amount of reimbursement necessary to reduce the wholesale purchase price of a distributor by a specified amount or to a specified price; C, a limit on the amount of fuel that a person may purchase and for which a distributor received a state reimbursement; and two, an individual account program with the following features: A, application on a permanent fund dividend application for energy assistance in the form of a state payment to the applicant's account with a fuel distributor or electrical utility, assistance based on heating degree days and the cost of energy in a community, electronic selection of a fuel distributor or electronic utility to receive the individual's energy assistance payment, and an optional amount from the applicant's dividend to be deposited in the individual's account with a fuel distributor or electric utility. A statewide base amount to be sent with the applicant's permanent fund dividend for an applicant for energy assistance who fails to select a fuel distributor or electric utility to receive the individual's energy assistance program. The governor's report to the legislature shall evaluate an amount of reimbursement necessary to reduce the wholesale purchase price of a distributor by a specified amount or to a specified price, a limit on the amount of fuel a person may purchase from a distributor with the state reimbursement, an individual account program with the following features: an application on a permanent fund dividend application for energy assistance in the form of state payment to the applicant's account with a fuel distributor or electric utility based on heating degree days and cost of energy, and a statewide base amount. This is basically what the bill does, and I encourage the chair and members of this committee to offer comments or questions or suggestions on the bill.
Thank you, Jane. Are there any questions or comments of the committee? Representative Peterson, then Representative Tuck.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jane, so if a household has six people eligible for dividends, they would get six times the 250 gallons or 1,500 kilowatts or...
Representative Peterson, through the chair, that would be true if they're all adults. This would only apply to adult members.
Adult members. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to qualify for the, you have to be eligible for the permanent fund dividend that was paid in 2011, which means in 2012, I'm sorry, that means you had been a resident in 2011 to be able to get this eventually in 2013. Is that correct?
Representative Tuck, it would be for 2012, and we have had some talks with Department of Law on this issue about residency, and of course we have different amounts of time to be in the state for residency, and they think it would be safer to have a application for people that have only been in the state 30 to 60 days.
Okay, and if I may, Mr. Chair, so when you said that for those in 2012, we're talking about those who received a dividend check in 2012, but to receive a dividend check in 2012, you have to be a resident in 2011. Is that correct, or am I messing up?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And, Jane, Representative Foster here, I've got a question. I had some folks contact my office, and this is just a clarification. I know the answer, but I just want to make sure that folks out in the public know, and maybe you can add to it. But just for clarification, some folks were asking, what if they were in prison in the qualifying year? They did not receive their PFD. They're afraid that that would disqualify them from being able to receive this voucher. However, that's not correct because technically, even if you didn't receive your PFD, for example, you applied for it, but it was garnished by the state, technically you have, you're a recipient of the PFD, and therefore you would still qualify, correct?
Representative Foster, I believe that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pruitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jane, please just help me clarify. This is going to be a lump sum check. Am I understanding that right? They'll get the lump sum for that total amount?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, how this is written currently, they would get a voucher that they would give to their fuel supplier, which would be on a list with the state as a accepted fuel supplier, and they could turn that voucher into their distributor and get fuel for it. The distributor would turn it back into the state and get paid. So the payments would come through the distributor, not to the individual, unless they elected, of course, to receive a check.
Follow-up,
Representative Pruitt.
So to understand, what were the legal ramifications of saying one per household and instead of saying what it looks like we're currently doing and saying one for every adult? I mean, was there the ability to say legal? I mean, I don't know if there's the legal department had some issues with it, but saying for each home that's in the state, there's a voucher to provide for this.
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, we haven't looked into that option, but we're in the process of looking into some other options at this time. So, you know, we will consider that and see if that's something that is okay with the sponsor and how that would work if there's legal ramifications.
Follow up?
And then just, I think that would be good. Another thing want to be cautious about is 2008 we had $1,200 and I worked for Sears. That was an economic stimulus for Taiwan because a ton of TVs went out. My concern at this point is even if we're not necessarily giving cash to all these people, it is an inflow of cash for them. Is there a way, potentially, if we're going to do this, and the voucher goes out to them, and they give it to their supplier? Is there somehow a way that we might be able to spread the cost? Does that make sense? Like leave it so that it basically takes some off of let's say several months worth of bills. That way, it's not just a lump sum check, and I think we would probably find that more people would end up benefiting, which is the intent of this, by not having just $1,200 or whatever, however much it ends up being for that particular person, an additional amount of money in their pocket that then potentially could be used for so many various other things. As much as I like to see my stock go up, because it hasn't been doing well lately, I really don't want people spending money on these TVs. Is there a way that over maybe 6 months or something, the intent is it pulls a set amount, $200, whatever, off each month? Is there a way to make this program somehow help in that way?
Representative Pruitt, I believe we probably have tried to do that by making it redeemable to a fuel distributor, and not to Sears, unfortunately. And in that way, you know, it would be a payment for fuel. It would not be a payment for a big screen TV unless, right, of course, somebody elected to take the $250, which is right, a portion of the, yeah.
Right. Just one more, just a dialogue.
And I
understand what you're saying. It's not $1,200 like it was last time, but it's kind of almost a reverse $1,200, I guess, is kind of where the concept was coming, because while they're not paying it out, it's almost like it's $1,200, if that makes sense. They're not going to pay for it, so they still have X amount of additional money. Is there a way that we can spread that out over a more months than just one, especially if they're going to get this in September, which is not really the hot and heavy energy demanding time of the year. Would like to almost see this stuff really apply in of course the winter and the time where people are really going to see the pinch. Anyways, just some dialogue. I'm not telling you it has to be that way, but I don't know if there's some discussion we can have with a way that might truly, I just like to see the benefit really come to the consumer here if this is something we choose to do. So, thank you.
I can understand that, Representative Pruitt, through the chair, and I'll have to think about that. I'm not so sure how that would be done, but, you know, it's definitely worth some thought and some consideration.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. And then, I'm sorry, Peterson.
All right. Starts with the same first letter. Jane, I believe I heard you right. Did you say that a distributor may opt out of the program? And if you did say that, what if that distributor was the sole distributor in a certain location? Do you have any idea what the solution to that problem might be?
Representative Peterson, through the chair, that is one of the things we've been working on.
Okay.
So, good question.
And also, just a follow-up on something that Representative Pruitt just said, depending on what part of the state and what the cost of heating oil is, if someone's heating with diesel and paying $6 or $7 a gallon, the 250 gallons actually might be worth considerably more than the $1,200 that we got a few years ago.
We have Representative Sadler and then Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jane, I definitely appreciate the desire of your boss, the bill sponsor, to help alleviate the high utility costs and the cold in Fairbanks. I understand that, but then I've not fully digested the bill's details. I think some of them lays out the mechanisms of how to distribute it, how to go through fuel brokers and appeals processes and so on and so forth. And they've got good intentions, but I've got to say I'm concerned about that the bill seems to place the state of Alaska, giving them responsibility to pick up individuals' personal heating bills, setting up a subsidy for, you know, basically to make Alaska a warmer place to live, and that's kind of a dangerous precedent. That's an endless commitment, and it's difficult to know where that would ever stop. We did have the energy vouchers of a couple of years ago, and now we've got this, and I anticipate it would happen again and again. I'm concerned. I don't see yet a requirement to insulate houses better, to have more efficient furnaces. I don't know if money spent for this kind of thing might not be better spent with the HFC weatherization program, with better fuel, a better generation, a gas pipeline, a dam, that kind of thing. It's a generous effort. I understand that inclination, but I've got some serious concerns about establishing this new entitlement in Alaska.
Representative Sadler, I understand. It is a policy call, and it may be a very tough one.
Representative Tuck and then Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will this be able to be used for people who have back payments and utilities, or is it just for a specific time period?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, at this point, we didn't envision it for people to pay off their back utility, but that's a discussion we've been having.
you know, credit market got pretty tight pretty quickly, and especially with fuel distributors. So that was one of the ideas we're sort of kicking around is, you know, if somebody paid off their arrears, then they could actually go and purchase fuel. So mm-hmm. it's an idea we've been kicking around but haven't come to a firm conclusion on it.
Okay. If I may, Mr. Chair. So currently it's for future. So you turn in the voucher, and then you'll be able to utilize that voucher through the utility, and then the utility can turn that into the Department of Revenue to get reimbursed.
Correct, Representative.
Okay. Parker. All right. Thank you. So what if someone sells their home, and now that home has is that voucher transferable from one location to another location?
Representative, talk through the chair. It would be, because it would be issued to a person, not to an actual physical location. So it would be transferable.
Okay, and then another one, Mr.
Chair. Representative.
Thank you. And if someone happens to have an outstanding voucher and is partially used, and then they decide to move out of state, does that location be able to still carry the voucher, or is it then null and void?
Representative Tuck, our expectation would be that it would be null and void.
Okay.
That it would be an Alaska program.
And then one last one, if you don't mind.
Representative.
Are the vouchers transferable?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, they are not transferable. However, as the bill is written, if you rent a property where your landlord is, you know, paying your utilities, you could negotiate one time with your landlord to have it come off your rent, and it could be you return the voucher, there'd be a form to fill out, and you would get a new voucher. The voucher would be issued in the name of your landlord.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, can you help me understand how this would potentially impact federal funds or certain beneficiaries that we get, certain programs that people are involved with? How is this going to impact that?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, I believe that this would probably have an impact. It would be deemed by the IRS to be income. We saw this when we did the super dividend. There is hold harmless clause in here for state assistance programs. What we cannot reach out, of course, into federal assistance programs, and I believe one of the biggest problems we had with the super dividend was in the veterans. So these are still issues we're working on.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further questions of the committee? Okay. Seeing none, at this time, House Bill 336 will be set aside for further consideration at a later date. The final – thank you, Jane. The final item on our agenda, we'll be hearing HB 323 by Representative Wilson or Wilson's staff, which is non-attainment area home heating system grants. And at this time, is there a motion to adopt House Bill 323, which is 27-LS-127-5/M as our working document? And is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Okay, is there any objection? Okay, there's no objection. HB 323 version M is adopted as our working document. We do have a fiscal note. The fiscal note is HB 323-DOR-AHFC-03-01-12. Is there a motion to adopt this fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the zero fiscal note.
Okay. Is there an objection? And hearing none, fiscal note is adopted. And we have Representative Wilson's staff here to tell us about HB 323. And Brandon, if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, and please proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Brandon Brzezinski, staff to Representative Tammy Wilson. And I apologize, Representative Wilson is not able to make the committee because she's in House Finance right now. So. HB 323 will provide assistance for EPA-designated PM 2.5 non-attainment areas in order to resolve their air quality problems. Inefficient furnaces and non-EPA-certified wood stoves are two of the primary contributors to PM 2.5. HB 323 will establish a program administered by AHFC providing up to a $10,000 grant for homeowners residing within a non-attainment area to convert their old inefficient oil-fired furnace or non-EPA certified wood stove to a newer, cleaner oil-fired furnace or a EPA certified wood stove. Unlike AHFC's energy efficiency rebate program and the Fairbanks North Star Borough's wood stove changeout program, where the homeowner must first pay out of pocket for their energy efficiency upgrades, then receive compensation after installation and completion of the upgrades, HB 323 will provide the homeowner with an upfront grant for the purchase and installation of their for their clean and more efficient heating device. HB 323 will also be not be subject to income limitations such as the weatherization program through HFC. The reason for this legislation is right now the Fairbanks North Star Borough is with, in an EPA non-attainment area. We have an air quality issue. The primary source of our non-attainment is the wood stoves that we burn and also our oil-fired furnaces, which creates secondary PM2.5, which is like a high sulfur dioxide in the air, and that's also it affects the health. We were designated a PM2.5 non-attainment area in 2010, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough has until 2014 to come within attainment. To mitigate this, we have the Fairbanks North Star Borough has to develop a state implementation plan, and a state implementation plan establishes limits or standards to minimize emissions and control strategies for non-attainment areas, and HB 323 would be one of these control strategies. If we do not meet attainment and develop a state implementation plan, the EPA could impose sanctions on Alaska, resulting in federal highway dollars being pulled. And I have included that in your bill packets, what could happen. Certain safety projects would still be allowed, but road improvements such as those would not be. Limitations on the furnaces. In order to qualify for this program, you have to have a furnace that is less than 80% efficient, and you have to have a wood stove that is non-EPA certified. And in order to verify this, we are using the same methodology that the AHFC Energy Rebate Program uses, where an energy rater will come to your house, verify that you have one of these heating devices, and then report back to AHFC, which will then administer the grant. And the way that we are intending this to work is that the grant will go to a registered vendor and installer rather than the actual homeowner, and then the vendor will install the heating device, and upon completion, they will receive payment, and then upon completion, the vendor's paid, and the homeowner will receive a 1099. To give an example of the savings for increasing your, improving the efficiency of your furnace, if you go from a 60% efficient furnace, which is the furnaces we're trying to target here, to, say, an 85% efficient furnace, you're going to save $30 for every $100 spent on fuel. And that's how much less fuel you'll be using. That's how much less particulate sulfur dioxide you're going to be emitting into the air. As for wood stoves, EPA-certified wood stove, it's certified to comply with EPA particulate emission guidelines according to the Clean Air Act. And wood stoves, like I said before, are one of the most the primary contributor to PM2.5. So by eliminating these wood stoves, these dirty burning wood stoves, we will greatly improve our air quality and come within attainment. We have placed certain restrictions on this program. If a homeowner has participated in the energy rebate or weatherization program in the past, they will not be eligible for a grant through the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Grant Fund established under HB 323. If a homeowner is eligible for the income-based weatherization program, they must go through that avenue of energy improvements. If a homeowner has received a grant through the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Grant Fund established under 323, they are not eligible to receive a grant through the energy rebate or the weatherization program in the future. AHFC may adopt further regulations if necessary, and as I said before, the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Grant Fund is not limited to income-based restrictions. So And in conclusion, HB 323 will provide non-attainment areas with another tool that we can utilize in combating local air quality issues. By removing the inefficient furnaces and non-EPA certified wood stoves and installing cleaner and more efficient units, Alaska will avoid potentially facing sanctions from the EPA, potentially losing highway funding, and will improve the health of all of our residents in the Fairbanks North Borough and any other future non-attainment areas across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. And I just want to note also for the committee here, on the off-net we have with the Alaska Housing Finance, Rosie Ricketts, Peter Haynes, Carrie Bowling, I believe, just available for questions. With that, I'd like to open it up to committee questions or comments, and we have one from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I got two, if we could. Brandon, in your opinion, which would be the most attractive option for a homeowner in the interior, the HSC's low-income weatherization program, the energy rebate program, or the efficient home heating grant fund program established by 323? Which is the best deal for a homeowner?
Well, that really depends. If you qualify for the weatherization program, you know, that would be the avenue that you should take, because the HFC will come in there with their installer and their contractors, and they'll scope out what needs to be done and install do the proper energy upgrades to your home. If you have the capital on hand and the funds to do so, the energy rebate program may be the way for you to go, because you're able to get a rebate back for more than just a furnace. Our bill, we're really trying to capture that group of people who don't qualify for the weatherization program because they make just a right above or a little too much money, but yet they don't have the funds necessary in order to do the energy rebate program or the Fairbanks North Star Borough's wood stove change-out program, where you have to put the money up front only to be compensated later. So this is just another tool to help with our problems, help improve energy efficiency, help mitigate our air quality issues in Fairbanks and across the state.
So you're trying to get the Goldilocks spot for those that are too poor. Too rich for the low income, but too poor for the rebate program.
That's right. It's just right.
That's right.
Yes.
Very good. Another question, if I could. For the record, I guess, just to at least elicit it, what efforts has Fairbanks made to comply with the EPA's particulate matter standards short of this?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the Fairbanks North Star Boroughs, we have a wood stove change-out program currently right now, and what that includes is there's three options that you can do. You can either remove your wood stove or outdoor hydronic boiler, and that you'll receive a payment for that, and you cannot install a new wood stove or outdoor hydronic for a boiler. You can replace your non-EPA first of all, the requirement is it has to be non-EPA certified wood stove and or a outdoor hydronic heater. You can replace your non-EPA certified wood stove or outdoor replace your non-EPA certified wood stove with a EPA certified wood stove. There we go. Or you can repair your wood stove if it's not up to par. Also, the borough is running proper wood burning technique advertised with public service campaigns. They have classes on how to teach, like how to dry and stack your wood properly to burn efficiently. And those are just some examples of how the Fairbanks North Star Borough is trying to mitigate our PM 2.5 issue.
Okay. There's no. So the primary source again is wood burning. It's not vehicle traffic.
No, we are no longer, we do no longer have a CO non-attainment status.
Okay, are there further questions of the committee? Representative Pruitt first and then Peterson.
Can you help me, tell me the extent, what's the extent of the energy audits that will have to take place?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt. The extent of the energy audit as we see it would be the energy rater would come into your home, look at your furnace, determine that the efficiency level on it, or determine that it is a non-EPA certified furnace, and that is pretty much the extent of that. There would be no blower door test, nothing like that. They would take pictures of it, verify that this unit is not qualifies for the program, send it to AHFC, where then the grant would be administered.
Okay. Then why don't we just have a minimum standard of efficiency for those boilers or those heaters? Why are we having energy auditors come out to determine that when we could just say in the program if you upgrade from what you have and it's below X percentage and you get to this percentage, then you can qualify for the program.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the reason why we are having an energy rater come to the home is just to confirm verification. If we're going to be giving out a grant of up to $10,000, and the energy rater, excuse me, I left a part out. The energy rater will also assess how much it will cost, because they're going to be sending the pictures in to AHFC, and they will determine the cost of the retrofit. So it could be up to $10,000. It could be less for the case of a wood stove, and maybe less than actual furnace because of the cost of the unit. So the energy raters, they're confirming that they have a unit that does not meet the qualifications, or that meets the qualifications of the program, and they're also providing an estimate to AHFC, which will then send the check out to the vendor to install.
And just one question to follow up right along with that. And what is the potential personal liability on that energy rater if the cost is over the $10,000 mark?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the program is capped at $10,000, so.
Okay. So, just to continue the dialogue, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair, so if he comes in and let's say his estimate is a little off and it is over, maybe that's what I should have clarified.
Okay.
Maybe he comes in and his estimate, it ends up being a little bit more than what his initial amount was. Is he personally liable? How? Because if the customer is thinking, mm-hmm. or the individual in this case is thinking, yeah, I can go ahead and plan to do it because I'm going to get X amount, and then come to find out it's going to be a little bit more than that or something. How is the rater? Are they liable for that? What's the control there? I guess is what I'm trying to get.
Through the chair, I'll have to get back to you with an answer on that.
Okay, so, appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, and we have a question from Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple questions. That's okay.
Sure.
I was wondering, what if you already had an energy audit a year or two ago and didn't have the money to go through the rebate program? Would you still be able to use that audit, or would you have to have another rater come out again?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, you would still have to have a rater come out again. I imagine the cost would be less because they don't have to perform a blower door test on your house. So it's just a visual inspection and a cost assessment.
All right, thanks. And then on page 2, lines 12 and 13, it is talking about if a home is 25% of the gross floor area of the building which is a grant is received, may not be devoted for commercial use. So someone who's actually using their home as a business could qualify under this, if I'm reading that right?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, yes. If small mom-and-pop type businesses, these are the same standards that the AHFC Energy Rebate Program uses for their energy rebate program.
Okay. And then there at the end of that line, just one additional question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
It says, an eligible home does not include a home. And I'm thinking that must be a misprint.
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, it reads, an eligible home does not include a home, one, that is to be destroyed, abandoned, or converted to another, so on and so forth.
All right. Okay. All right. This just was a little confusing there.
Yeah, there are further questions. Okay, at this time, we're going to set aside House Bill 323 to a further date for consideration. I just wanted to note we do have in the audience here AHFC, Dan Fowski, and Stacey Schubert, and at this point they don't have any questions or comments.
Would Mr. Fowski like to comment on this bill?
He's okay. Looks like he's
just wondered.
He's giving the all okay. So with that, are there any further questions or comments overall before we?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I would ask a question real quick. Are there any other states that you know of that offer similar kinds of grant programs? Are there other states in Alaska that are cold or that have the particulate matter problem?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'd have to get back to you on that.
Okay. With that, I think our business is complete today, and the next regular meeting will be Thursday, March 15, 2012 at 3 p.m. in the Barnes Committee Room. We'll be hearing bills previously heard. So the meeting is adjourned, and it is 4:04 p.m. Thank you very much, everybody.